For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, your two favorite troglodytes, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. Gentlemen, here at Catholic Radio Indy, we are unabashedly pro-life.
Woohoo!
There have been a number of decisions and lawsuits and everything else going on throughout the nation over the past few weeks that, I think it's time that we bring folks up to speed and have a little discussion of where the pro-life movement stands today. So, have at it.
Well, I really appreciate that opportunity because, right, Mark, I mean, there's a lot that's been going on. There's a lot that's in front of just, I mean, if I just think over the last, say, 6 months, right, change in administration always brings changes in the pro-life movement. Sometimes helps, some administrations help, we get more advancements, and others we get setbacks. But that's only at one level. There's also states, right? The state, pro-life is very much a local, localized type of ministry movement. So where do you want to start?
Well, I think even below the state level, you've got to look at this as a cultural, social issue first and foremost. And I think at that level, the pro-life movement is making huge gains as well. So, year after year, the abortion numbers do continue to go down. Now, we did have some bad news here in Indiana that the abortion numbers have gone up slightly. But, still, we're still under 8,000 abortions. So there were about 7,500 or so, 7,400 or so in 2020, and that was up a bit from previously. But to put that in perspective, once upon a time in, I think, about 1983,
when things started to peak,
that would have been the high point, at least in Indiana. I think nationally the high point is actually more like 1991, 1992.
Okay, yeah.
So things were on the upswing. But there were over 16,000 abortions in the state of Indiana.
Oh, good Lord.
So we're at half the number of what it was at its peak. And you can kind of look at three numbers to kind of keep track of where people, I think where we are as far as a pro-life state goes. And one of them is the raw numbers. Like I said, we're half of where we were at the peak. The other is the abortion rate. So that's the percentage of abortions that you have compared to the population of women in their reproductive years, right? So,
Okay. So
this is looking at, okay, how likely is it for a woman to seek an abortion just kind of from the general public? And, there's a lot of factors that go into that. I mean,
I can only imagine. Right. I mean, that's just one way to look
at it. And that number is way, way down as well. I honestly think the bigger reason that number is way, way down is there are fewer and fewer pregnant women in our
society. Birth rates have collapsed.
Birth rates have collapsed. Pregnancy rates have collapsed. And with that, then, the abortion rate's going to go down. But the most important number to look at, and I think this is where the good news really sits, is the abortion ratio. And that is percentage of pregnant women.
Is kind of the precondition for an abortion.
That's correct.
That's a good starting point.
And so this is the number of women that are choosing life, right?
So
that's going to include unplanned pregnancies. That's going to include, and that is now lower than it was when Roe versus Wade was decided in 1973.
Okay.
So, we have continued to make huge inroads as far as, having a culture that more and more respects life. We still have a long way to go. I mean, there's still, like I said, mm-hmm. 7,500 abortions in the state of Indiana. There's still just, once again, just shy of 1 million abortions in the country every year. Now, to put that in comparison, at the high watermark, there were about 1.6, 1.7 million abortions.
Good Lord.
When we were at our peak. So you know, we've cut that down significantly. So we're more and more, I think, moving to where we can say, okay, we've got more of a pro-life culture. Now, the law and how the law affects that, that's another story. And we gotta kind of look at that, because you know, that's a mixed bag. There's a lot of hope right now in the air with the current Supreme Court. And the current Supreme Court just decided to not stay. They haven't put an end to the challenge to the law, but they're not putting an emergency injunction on a law that passed in Texas.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting.
Right. It restricts abortion down to after, you know, basically no abortion after a heartbeat's detected. So, right.
Which is about 6 weeks.
About 6 weeks. Exactly. So, you know, in
that's got Planned Parenthood just in a twist.
Right. Well, it does have a life of mother exception. It does have it does have other exceptions involved in it. So there may be some
hard to imagine room. Life of mother's gonna
you know, I guess, you know? I think that all depends on how that gets defined. And you know, you're gonna have multiple. I mean, there's not just one court challenge to this. There's gonna be multiple court challenges to this as time goes on. We'll have to see how the courts kind of handle it. So, you know, we're all hopeful about that. But, you know, courts are a mixed bag. Here in Indiana, we just had about half our abortion code struck down by a court case. We went overnight from being probably about the fifth most pro-life state as far as our laws go to being one of the least restrictive states. You know, now abortion.
Was that a federal court that did that?
Yeah, that was Judge Sarah Barker Evans down in down close to Evansville. And, you know, she's been kind of at the center of a lot of these abortion decisions. It's being challenged by the state. Our Attorney General is challenging it, continuing to challenge it.
Rokita is very pro-life, I think.
And it's going to go in front of at least a panel of judges from the Seventh Circuit here soon. So, you know,
we've got to pray for that.
Exactly. We'll have to keep that in our prayers. But, you know, the most important provision that got struck down by that is our requirement that abortions be provided by a physician. You know, no longer in the state.
Oh, Lord, why would you? They're horrible to begin with, abortions. But then imagine someone who's not a medical doc, quote unquote medical doc. I mean, I get it. In my view, this is going to be uncharitable, but I don't think anyone who goes to med school it's hard to imagine anyone goes to med school with the aspiration of becoming an abortionist. You know, that just seems, it seems like that's more like where you sink into it, right? When you look at some of these, the careers of the abortionists that in our neck of the woods, they sunk into that, right? They didn't like elevate themselves into it. Now you sink into it as a last ditch money making effort, is how I see it.
Yeah, and that's always been the biggest challenge, I think, for the abortion industry, is to try to recruit more abortionists, because
look at Gosnell, right. he's gonna die in jail,
right?
He's arguably the biggest mass murderer in U.S. history, and he's an abortionist. And he got convicted of it.
Right. And you know, from Gosnell's perspective, I mean, what really is the difference between a late term abortion that he was doing in his office, which is, I mean, medically, that is incredibly dangerous. You know,
it's probably actually safer for the mothers to do what he did, which was birth them and then kill the babies outside the womb. It's safer for the woman.
And that was his rationale. It is safer to commit infanticide than it is to commit an abortion. Right,
they did a movie about it too, which actually was a pretty, I thought, pretty accurate depiction. I studied a lot about him, and he's just
There's two books out about him and that, you know, that whole fiasco in
Philadelphia,
because there was a huge dereliction of duty on the part of the state.
It was 16 years they didn't inspect the Pennsylvania his clinic, despite the
exactly
awfulness.
And oh, you know, I mean, I think
and that, a woman had to die.
Correct.
That's what triggered it.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, there are women who die in abortions. There's no doubt about that.
Watch that documentary, Blood Money. You can watch that. She chronicles. She was an abortionist herself, but this woman in Blood Money, she operated abortion mills.
Right.
And she'll be the first one she's the first one to admit how absolutely dangerous. Well, it's unplanned too. You can see both from the book, the Abby Johnson story, but also in the movie, you can see how dangerous. There's a gruesome scene of a young woman who nearly bleeds out.
Right. Yeah. And that's the chemical abortion. I think that's one side of this debate that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. And that is the developing medical technology around abortion.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, and this goes broader than just abortion. But one of the, I think, side effects of us having this sort of national debate around abortion and the insistence that no, women can choose what they do. We're not going to look necessarily at what medically is the most healthy for the woman, because you can make an argument that early in pregnancy, perhaps an abortion is equal to carrying the baby to term. But once you get past the first trimester, it gets harder and harder to make that argument that abortion is somehow safer than carrying the child to term and having childbirth. And, but just by having abortion there and leaving this to women and trying to take this out of, I think, the realm of medical guidance and physicians helping women do what is most healthy for them, we've set the technology back in women's reproductive health and women's health in general, light years. So, and birth control has contributed to this as well. You know, when you've got the birth control pill there that you can just kind of give to a woman to mask any problem that's there.
The contraceptive mentality is crucial,
right?
But to the abortion industry.
You stymie medical technology actually trying to figure out what's causing these problems and all of that. So one area of technology, though, that has happened is we have figured out how to be able to reverse the beginnings of the abortion pill. So, and that's a fantastic pro-life victory. We just passed a law here in Indiana to try to make that information more widely available to women that,
RU 484, the Plan B.
Right, RU 46, right.
46, yep, yeah.
Yep. But once you start that regimen, it can be reversed. And successfully reversed. And there's hundreds of babies.
They don't want you to say that, Mark.
Right, they don't. But it's true. And there are babies that are alive today to testify that.
Praise God.
Right, exactly. So the technology, I think, as it goes along, it's going to affect this debate. And it's only going to affect it in a way, I think, that helps and improves the pro-life position.
And we need to take a break. We'll be back with more of this discussion on abortion rights, if there is such a thing, and the ethics behind abortion in the United States. Here on the Catholic Cave, you're listening to Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Hi, I'm Patty Cochran. Are you a non-Catholic who listens to Catholic Radio? Would you like to find out more about how to join the Catholic Church? There's a program called RCIA that can introduce you to the Catholic faith, and it's available at your local parish. You don't have to make a commitment to participate in the program. Just try it out. I did, and it was one of the best steps I've ever made. Contact your local parish office for more information and start your journey home.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell with my fellow cave men. That is Mark Tuttle and Kent Blanford, our trusty sidekick and producer. So at the break, Mark, Kent mentioned something that we love, which is ethics.
Right.
We love ethics. We love talking about Catholic ethics, Catholic morality, Catholic philosophy. What the heck, Mark? That's the whole purpose of the show. So let's get philosophical.
Right, rights and rights, right?
Right, right.
Right, right.
So he says, so Kent mentioned, you know, there's, and it comes up all, you hear it all the time in that when you talk about life issues in these sort of, in debates about the right to an abortion and right to life.
Right.
It seems like both, they seem like one seems exclusive of the other. If I have a right to life, then I ought to be protected from being aborted, because you don't have an abortion until you have a dead baby, right? Or if I have a right to an abortion, then there is no absolute right to life because, again, abortion is going to be the unjust taking of an innocent human life.
Right. And underneath that, there's a claim of at least a certain amount of autonomy. And you know, honestly, I think at that point, you're almost talking about complete autonomy.
In abortion, it's absolute autonomy.
Right.
You know, nothing outside myself lays claim to me or what I want to do.
Exactly. And of course, then there's also then, you know, I think the way it's framed and should be framed is, does a fetus have a right to dwell and exist within a woman's body? Right. I mean, that's the way that gets
cut. Then a lot of these like thought experiments come up.
But first, I think we've got to unpack the idea of what exactly is a right, because, you know, the way that word gets thrown around, it gets used in a lot of different contexts. There seems to be a right to just about everything these days. And I'm not sure that's really the original use of the word. And I think it's probably even controversial to use it the way our founding fathers used it.
Right.
In the idea of inalienable rights, rights that we have just by being human, right?
Right.
Because, you know, the word right comes from legal discourse. And a right goes along with a sort of responsibility or obligation within the terms of a contract. So that's really where right comes from, is contractual laws and contractual agreements. You have certain rights, I have certain rights under this agreement, and if you break those rights, the agreement's broken, it falls apart. That's really the original meaning of the word right. And it's gotten transferred to this idea of, well, we have certain rights as human beings because we're made in the image and likeness of God, we're human, and with that, there are certain responsibilities and obligations that other people have towards me just simply because I exist. And, you know, I'm not sure that's as uncontroversial as we pretend to make it.
Right. I think you're onto something. There's, I would say there, the confusion that's out there, lies in the misapplication of the term rights, where the term rights has profoundly expanded in just sort of common parlance to include one's preferences. So, which would be no rights at all. And so I think you're the way I like to explain my conception of it of a right is a natural right. And a natural right, like you said, has a corresponding duty or obligation to it. If you can't find a corresponding duty or obligation to a right that you're stating, then chances are it's not a right. You're actually talking about a preference that you may have. And I do think where the duties and obligations flow, especially when we think about, it's not limited to Catholic morality or Catholic philosophy. It stems from natural law. So natural law has precepts, and from those precepts arise duties and obligations to oneself and others. And if I have a duty or obligation that is, again, grounded in to be found within the natural law, then I have a moral claim, which is how I would define a right, a moral claim to perform or do something.
Right. A duty, right? You naturally have certain duties. And I think we look at it almost backwards a lot of times, that you have certain duties towards others because you're a rational creature and because they're rational creatures, right?
Yeah. We're social. We're social.
We're social, but we're also reason governed, right?
We seem to be governed more by emotions these days.
Right. Right.
Going back to McIntyre.
Yeah. But with our understanding of how the world works, and therefore how other people work, which is kind of based on how we work, right? How we operate. There become certain obligations and duties that you have towards other people, to treat them as rational creatures that to a certain extent are responsible for their own actions. But on the other hand, have to work in community with you, have to be able to cooperate with you. And so there have to be some very natural understandings that happen from the get-go that have to be respected by everybody. So really, when you get down to it, I think natural rights are those basic, reasonable, reason-based sort of understandings that almost have to exist for people to be able to exist in community, even from the get-go.
Yeah, and I think that's I think what you're getting at is how when you think about how natural law is defined, I think you're right. Your natural law is we can apprehend it through the light of reason. But I also think for Catholics, it's not just Catholics, but for Catholics, it's the Ten Commandments also. That is the moral law, right, as God's given it to us. So when you put together natural law, the precepts that flow from natural law, the duties and obligations, which then are the basis from which we have moral claims or natural rights, you put that together with the Ten Commandments, now you have a framework from which all human flourishing, both personal and communal, can occur.
Right. And I think even beyond the Ten Commandments, within Catholic tradition and Catholic theology, the sacredness of human life, you know, that this is a creation of God that you're talking about. This isn't just some, you know, I don't know, evolutionary creature that just happens to be here existing that we can do with what we want.
You're making me itch to barbecue Darwin, okay? Which is one of my favorite pastimes.
Well, I'm not sure we need to barbecue Darwin necessarily, sure we do. But
and his disciples.
But I do think we need to recognize that, you know, if you're Catholic, you recognize the sacredness of human life. I mean, that almost has to go.
The image and likeness of God.
Exactly. And not only that, but the custodian and the one who bestows the Holy Spirit, you know, let's face it, there is no God on earth without humankind. And that's a pretty hard thing to get your mind around. But the presence of God here on earth is dependent on his church, and his church is made up of human beings. So, you know, that. I think that aspect of it as well leads to this understanding that human life itself is sacred because it becomes the vessel from which God acts in the world.
That's certainly an important aspect of it. I also think it's for me. I also go back to the centrality of the truth of the matter that human beings have immortal souls.
Right.
Right. So immortal souls cannot and do not emerge from even sophisticated biological evolutionary processes of chance and evolution. Immortal souls just don't emerge from that. So, no, they're placed there. Each person has a mortal soul that's created and placed by God. Right. So that's another element that again, points to. What are we getting at ultimately with this? It's for me. It's we're building the foundation, Mark, for why human life is sacred, why human life deserves and really requires protection, respect, because it's intrinsically good. People are intrinsically valuable, and abortion, therefore, is a grave, serious, a horrific sin because it violates those precepts.
Right. And I'm not even sure that you have to go so far as where the Catholic Church goes and recognizes that life is sacred. You know, I think you can.
Oh, I agree. Although I do think that's the most important part.
That's the most important part.
But you can almost compartmentalize that and just on using natural reason, the virtue of just justice, even justice, you know, properly understood as giving another what they're due, you can see that without life, without the right to life, no other right matters.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, I don't have a right to housing if I'm dead, right? I don't need a house if I'm dead.
And abortion is a way of instantly instrumentalizing human life.
Oh, good point.
So, you know, when you talk about human life being disposable in some sense, then its value is no longer intrinsic to it. It's based on what that person can do. It's based on what that person can, how that person can contribute. And that can be a slippery slope that we don't want to go down, because then you've got basically society kind of deciding which members are valuable, which ones are not valuable. And you know, as I said, we've seen that horror show on a couple of fronts when society starts to make those decisions.
Yeah, certainly that's the case. I mean, it's really one of the ultimate expressions of power and control in an evil way is when I have the right to kill you unjustly.
Right. And in our society with abortion, you know, that decision right now we leave to, you know, on an individual basis. But when you look around the world, you look at China, you look at other societies, it's not hard for society as a whole to start to come into play with that. Even here in the United States, there's a tremendous amount of pressure that's put on women whom society says, well, you are not fit really to be a good mother. That's kind of what society's saying.
And this is the wrong time.
So boyfriends and parents and other people around begin to put a lot of pressure on her to abort that child, because they've deemed not so much that her offspring is going to be unfit to live, but they've deemed that she's not fit to be a good mother. And, you know, when you've got the societies making those types of decisions on behalf of women, that is not a just situation or just decision either.
And we need to take a break. We'll be back with more on the Catholic Cave, looking at the pro-life situation in the U.S. and throughout the world. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, and this is the Catholic Cave. We'll be right back.
So the scan button brought you here. Awesome. We like company. Get to know us. And if you have to leave, come back. You're always welcome. Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you been married and have since divorced? Do you think your marital status prevents you from coming to church? Most Catholics and non-Catholics unfortunately have a lot of misconceptions about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Pope Francis has recently encouraged all people with questions about marriage to make an appointment and talk with their parish priest. As Catholic priests, we look forward to the opportunity to help you on your journey through life. Please make an appointment to speak with the priest today. We are and will always be here for you.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blandford, and we're talking a little bit about abortion. So there has been a case in Texas. There was a law that passed that restricted abortion down to when a heartbeat can be detected in the state of Texas. And so far,
makes sense to me.
Right,
go
exactly.
Texas.
So there's law there's legal challenges against this law, but the Supreme Court basically just recently refused to put an injunction on that law. So that law is going to go into effect despite the fact that it's being challenged. And
by the time this show airs, it will be in effect.
It will be in effect,
and hopefully not repealed.
Right, in theory, and hopefully enforced too. Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of there's still a lot of things that we'll have to kind of watch and see how it plays out. But, that law, I think, is illustrative of a point that we were leading up to. We were talking about the morality of killing another human being, why killing another human being is wrong. And of course, very few people in favor of abortion are going to disagree with that. I think most of them will recognize, you can't just arbitrarily kill other human beings that we find inconvenient or because we choose.
They're an economic burden.
Yeah, they're going to get in our way. You know,
we don't exterminate or liquidate the bottom 5%
right
every year from the socioeconomic ladder in the United States to rid ourselves of them.
Yeah. Now, I mean, euthanasia is a related issue. So, I mean, it does come up. So I think there's a little bit of a move.
Dehumanizing.
Right. Yeah. And the idea that we can dispose of other people that we no longer
throw them away.
Fit for life.
Right.
But I think really where the pro-choice argument comes in is I can make this choice because what I'm choosing is not to destroy another human being, but I'm destroying something that is pre-human or in the process of becoming human or not
quite
fully human.
Right.
So,
and there's a code word for that, isn't there?
Right. Well, but I think that's why the Texas law was written the way it was. Once you can detect a heartbeat, now we have something that we can identify as a human being, right?
Yeah. It's hard to just call it a clump of cells.
Right.
Because clumps of cells don't typically, you don't think of a clump of cells as having, you know, a heartbeat.
Right, right, exactly. So the detectable heartbeat now is a sign that this is a living human being that is worthy of protection. But
guess what? I won't say which radio station, but a national radio station listening to, they won't even use the word heartbeat in relation to the bill. You know what they called it? When cardiac motion is detected.
Correct. Because
see the euphemisms?
Right.
I know where you're going too. You're going to fetus.
No. Where I was going with that is the rationale for that. The reason that they say that is because for them, the criteria of being human,
right,
and being a human being is some sort of conscious brain activity, right? So you have to have a certain threshold.
And location, too.
Yeah, you have to have a certain...
You can't be in the womb. That's like exclusionary. I think that's part of it, too.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that's pretty radical, though. I mean, if your criteria is simply that as long as a child is in the womb, then it's fair game, and once it's out of the womb, it's no longer, you know, that's like you're talking about a very, very few pro-choice people that would be supportive of abortion as a moral
choice
a moral choice up until birth. Yeah, I know that's the way our laws are reflected, but we're
some politicians are
we're
there.
Radical in that sense. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You look around the world, America has some of the most radical abortion laws.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that. Europe,
it's horrible.
It's funny because in Europe, you know, you look at France and France has it restricted down. I think theirs is based upon trimester, but it's definitely about through
which
12
is kind
weeks.
Of an arbitrary thing too. I think that was invented during Roe v. Wade anyway, wasn't it?
Well, not for the French. I mean, the French.
No, not for the French. Right, but I mean, that's where this whole one-third, two-thirds, three-thirds of a baby came from.
But they find us absolutely barbaric that we allow abortion past 12 weeks.
They're right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you know, if I hate to say it, I mean, this sounds bad, but when the French are looking at you as doing something barbaric, you really should second think that.
That could be a good cultural marker, right? Right.
But anyway, the criterion of what makes a human being a human being very much mm-hmm. comes into play, because at one point or another, if you accept abortion, you're basically saying it's not conception. It's not the act of simply existing that makes you human. You know, your existence of having humanish chromosomes, because let's face it, people with Down syndrome have a different number of chromosomes than the rest of us do too. They're human beings as well.
Right,
so can't just say 42 chromosomes.
Right.
Human DNA and a human genetic makeup, just existing with human DNA and human genetic makeup does not make you human. You have to come up with something else that does. And, whether it's the law in Texas that says, well, it's a detectable heartbeat. I think the detectable heartbeat is sort of a practical thing. Because
it appeals to common sense.
Yeah, you have to be able to determine that there's a baby there. So you're not going to be able to determine that there's a baby there until you can hear it, right? So
I think there's
sort of a practical consideration there.
Well, but I think that's why you'll one of the ways you can determine how someone's thinking about the child in the womb is whether or not they refer to that child as a baby, or is the term fetus being brought up, or clump of cells? Because even WebMD, as an example, right, which you might think of like, well, that should be a depository of objective scientific medical information. Well, I'll tell you what. Now, haven't looked in a little bit, but if you go in there and you look under like abortion and the language that the terminology they're using under abortion and abortion related, they're going to refer to a fetus But then you go to WebMD and you go and you start looking up around things like childbirth, they'll start talking about child, baby. And so I think that's one, this is where the language makes a big difference, or it's at least it's a makes a big difference, and it's a signal as to what someone, what position someone might be holding.
Right. But on the other hand, I don't think we as pro-life people should shy away from using the term fetus and fetal, you know, because it is an accurate term when it comes to describing a human being that's in utero. And the problem with it is fetus is broader than just humanity. And so when you talk about a fetus, you're not being specific as to what species you're talking about. So you can talk about fetal elephants. You can talk about fetal horses. You can talk about fetal cows, which is my favorite. I had a Russian professor in college, and right. we would be talking about Russian literature, and she often wanted to talk about how this represented the fetal cows in the universe. And
that's a pretty good accent.
And it took us a long time to figure out what the fetal cows were in the universe. So, oh no, she means fatal chaos. But
oh, funny.
But anyway, you can talk about fetal cows. You can talk about fetal horses.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, when we're talking about a fetus, we're talking about a fetal human being. And I think we pro-lifers need to start pointing that out, that yes, you can talk about this as a fetus, but fetus itself, it's like talking about an animal, and it's really important.
What I'm saying, it's often used as a dehumanizing.
Yeah, you have to talk about
it's a technical term, but
what species of fetus are you talking about here? And you know, I don't think there's any other answer to that question. You're talking about a human being.
Well, yeah, I didn't come up with this, but I think it's very useful, and it's this statement: human beings only have human offspring.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
So that's a very clear, short, easy way to convey a truth, a fact. And so we don't, when someone says they're pregnant, woman says she's pregnant, you don't start wondering, well, what's she pregnant with? Is it a zebra? Is it an iguana? You know, what is she going to have puppies? What's going on there? No, we know human beings only have human offspring. Therefore, the child in the womb that's developing, the fetal development, is a continuous living organism.
Right. Now, where the pro-choice argument goes with that, though, is, but when you're talking about a human being, you're talking about a person that's endowed with certain rights, right? Cows don't have rights.
Right.
You know, if I destroy, let's face it, if I destroy a fetal cow, I've not really done anything wrong. I've just destroyed a cow. Now, I think there's a recognition that destroying a fetal cow is still destroying a cow, but there's nothing wrong with destroying a cow. But when we're talking about human beings, we're talking about persons, and that's why it's wrong to kill a human being, and it's not wrong to kill a cow, because persons have certain rights. And what endows us with rights is that idea of personhood, that we're not just animals, but we're sentient, conscious, self-conscious, self-aware, thinking, rational animals. And so that's what makes really, that's where the absolute protection of life should come in. And early on, you can't see that sort of consciousness in a fetal human being. It takes time for that to develop. And so, you know, I don't think this, but the pro-choice argument would be that you can, just like you can kill a fetal cow, you can kill a fetal human being before it develops self-awareness and consciousness.
Right. And I agree. I've heard that argument. It doesn't have a lot of purchase with me, because newborns don't have a lot of self-awareness either. Look at a 3-day-old baby, right?
Yeah,
they don't have a lot going. They, you know, again, they have, they're in a stage of development, early development for the kinds of things that we are, human beings. And they have that potential to develop that. And
yeah, I think the potency and the ability to develop that, I think, is the
potency,
key there.
That's a good right. Technical term. Yeah, that's yeah. Right.
Because
but that's when they immediately go, once yep. You point out that, wait a minute, even a newborn has the same kind of, you know, same kind of cognitive, basically stage of cognitive development. That's when they go to what I mentioned earlier. Then it's all of a sudden it's location. Well, but once they're outside the womb, that's a, that once that geography changes, you know, something magical happens coming down the birth canal and poof, now you're human, you know?
Right.
Which
right,
means you know nothing about a birth canal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the act of being birthed that
somehow bestows moral worth. That's right, exactly. The key. Yeah. And I think that's where we're really at. We're going to have to take a break here, but that's the, we have to stay tuned too, because we're going to talk about a lot of exciting and important upcoming pro-life events after this break. But moral worth, when that's where I think the real debate is these days, or where you get the most pushback.
And we'll pick that up right after this break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy. You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a voice for the church that's seldom heard in our chaotic world. We're confirmation for the strong of faith and encouragement and answers for those in doubt. We're there to rejoice with your triumphs and to be a voice of consolation through the dark times. We're a voice for vocations and proudly pro-life. We are Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Helps me feel closer to God each day and helps me stay grounded in my faith and just keeps me going.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell with Mark Tuttle, Kent Blanford. A couple of things. Most of this segment, we're going to spend sharing lots and lots of upcoming events, activities that are happening within the pro-life movement, ministry, different things here in central Indiana. Of course, and beyond, if you're listening beyond, you're welcome to come to all of this stuff. But before we get there, we'll just take a quick second, kind of wrap up where we left off before the break. It's this question mark of moral worth. I think that's where I think people are really informed, have done serious research, investigation into the pro-life versus pro-abortion controversy, debate, landing on the side of pro-abortion. What I find is they acknowledge the biology, the embryology, and the humanity of what's going on. They simply, in terms of the development of the baby, but they simply state that the moral worth and autonomy of the mother, who is what she is,
an adult,
an adult.
Yep,
has if her needs, wants, desires are such that they continue with the pregnancy, she should be allowed to subordinate the pregnancy to other higher ends that she's pursuing.
Right. Yeah.
Like education. You hear that one a lot. I'm in college, or I'm going to go to college. This pregnancy will interfere with that. Therefore, I should have the right to, again, steer my own life in the direction I want it to go. And I therefore need access to an abortion to end the pregnancy.
Yeah. And I think this is where the pro-life movement really has its work cut out for it. Because when you get down to it, the justification for abortion is usually made along utilitarian lines. So there's a moral calculus that goes on that says, okay, by allowing abortion, we're going to lessen human suffering, and we're going to somehow, you know, increase human flourishing, because we're going to be eliminating hardship and misery and difficulties in some capacity by
allowing for the mother it drives me a little nuts, but it's this sort of, there's also this sort of crystal balling, like, that we know because of the current circumstances of this pregnant woman that the child that would be born, we know that they're going to have a hard life, and therefore we're going to spare them that. Like life is not that predictable.
Right, right. Certainly,
and people overcome all kinds of terrible situations. Well,
not only is life not that predictable, but there's a certain lack of faith and trust that's built into that. That's right. Baked into that. And you know, I think ultimately that's why abortion started off as a pagan practice that Christianity opposed from the get-go. Because as a Christian, you have faith, you have trust, you have to recognize grace that comes into the universe from the Eucharist and from the practice of the church, etc. And to sit there and automatically say, well, this is going to be a life that overall, when we balance it out with other things, is going to kind of create more misery in the universe.
That's the one-child policy as a recent example in China.
Correct.
Now, they've backed away from it because the horrendous consequences of having that for decades. But that was exactly, if you want to see that come alive on a grand scale, institutionalized program of death by the Chinese Communist Party, it was that. It was the one-child policy.
Yeah, and here in the United States, it's often the devastating circumstances and social circumstances of the woman. Well, you know, she's poor. She's uneducated. She needs to have an opportunity to go to college.
Well, that's what
she's
we're told, unmarried. But I don't think the numbers support that.
Yeah, I don't think the numbers necessarily support that, but it doesn't matter.
That's the story.
Right, that's the story, and it shows a lack of trust and a lack of hope. And, you know, I think that's why as pro-lifers, we need to become more of a people of hope with that. I mean, Indianapolis, and I've often said this, and I think this is probably the strongest pro-life argument that you can make. Indianapolis is a city full of loving, generous people that we are big enough, we are good enough, and we are wealthy enough really to support every single person in this city plus. You know, we do not have to resort to abortion to help women out of their difficult circumstances. We can rise to the challenge, generally speaking, in Indianapolis, we are a pro-life people.
Well, Chase, right next door to Planned Parenthood on Georgetown Road, the largest killing center in the state, is the Women's Care Center. It's right next door to do exactly what you're talking about.
Right. And it's one thing to say it, though, but it's another thing to do it. And so we really need to, as a movement within Indianapolis, step up. We need to make ourselves visible. We need to make that message clear to women that there's a large community of people here that are willing to support you, that are willing to help you through your pregnancy, that are willing to be there for your child. Even we're often accused of only caring about babies while they're in the womb, and that could be the farthest thing from the truth.
Right.
You look at the Women's Care Center, which is, I mean, I think when you look at pregnancy resource centers like Life Centers, like the Women's Care Center, you know, the number of those dwarf the number of abortion facilities by ratio almost 4-1.
Yeah.
When you look at those centers, you have to see those as sort of, those are the emergency units, right? Those are those are the hospitals for the dire cases. But the fact of the matter is our culture comes together in so many other different ways, whether it's St. Vincent de Paul, whether it's Catholic Charities, whether it's government assistance. You know, we have support mechanisms to support women in our society that goes well beyond birth, and pro-life people support those. You know, I don't want to speak for everybody because I know there's political differences and you get Republican and Democrat thrown into that whole discussion. But nonetheless, by and large, pro-life people support measures that support families, that support children, that support the poor, and that support the women who need the help the most. And it's the pro-lifers that are really leading the charge for those things.
Oh, yeah. And for people listening who may have made men and women who may have been a part of an abortion decision in the past, two great ministries that are available. Every diocese, I think, has a Rachel's Vineyard. And then here in central Indiana, there's also Debbie Miller's Healing Hidden Hurts. And I know those are, I know on Catholic Radio here, there's some spots that are run from time to time with contact information. But bearing witness, like you said, to the loving presence of Christ our Lord in mercy and charity to others, a great way to do that's coming up. It's 40 Days for Life, 40daysforlife.com. I have the privilege of helping lead that again. A couple of things I'm going to point out really quick. Best way to get information is to go to the website, 40daysforlife.com. You can swoop right into Indianapolis from there. There's three other locations throughout the state. It's in 60-plus countries now. Millions of people have participated. Prayerful, peaceful community outreach. We go to Planned Parenthood on Georgetown Road and just to pray. A lot of Catholic, we mostly Catholics might see us out there praying like the Rosary, Divine Mercy Chaplet together. But it's for everyone. And our kickoff is a great friend of this show and the station, Eric Slaughter, will be our keynote speaker. And that's going to be Sunday, September 19th, really from 2 to 3:30 p.m. at Holy Rosary Parish. He's actually contributed to a book as a post-abortive father. I think he'd talk a little bit about that. So that's our kickoff for 40 Days for Life. 40 Days for Life actually is going to run September 22nd through All Hallows Eve, which is October 31st. So that's a great event. I'm going to save the best one for last, which is the one I'm going to ask you to talk about, Mark. One other thing that's coming up, actually on the 18th of September, great friend Larry Kunkel. Some of you listening know Larry. He's great. He's the pro-life director for the Knights of Columbus for the state of Indiana. They are doing, once again, biking for babies. This is with bicycles, not motorcycles, and they ride across the state of Indiana. There's a sort of a halfway point, which is at Our Lady of Lourdes in Indianapolis, September 18th at 1:30 p.m. Come to Our Lady of Lourdes, 1:30 p.m., September 18th. I'll be there, many others, and just to cheer them on, right, because they're raising money, again, to help pro-life cause. Knights of Columbus, I'm a Knight of Columbus. I know you are, too. Fantastic pro-life organization for Catholic men. They do a lot with baby boxes, ultrasounds, all sorts of stuff.
Right. Yeah. The Knights of Columbus really step up to kind of be a backbone and funding mechanism for the pro-life movement as a whole, whether it's pregnancy resource centers, providing them with ultrasounds. They go out of their way to make sure.
Those things aren't cheap either. No, those things are like 30 grand a pop or something.
Right. And once again, you know, once a woman is able to see the humanity of her child, the recognition of,
that's a game changer.
The maternal instinct kicks in, sure. I think she recognizes, this isn't just a blob of tissue. This is an actual human being.
See the baby. Yeah.
And it saves lives. So the money that comes from biking for babies to support the Knights of Columbus and their efforts to support the pro-life movement, the whole state benefits from that. I mean, everybody benefits from that.
Well, one of my favorite annual dinners is coming up, though.
That's right. Right to Life of Indianapolis.
Woo-hoo! Great organization. Full disclosure, Mark and I are involved with that group.
And, speaking of connecting the dots as far as the humanity of the unborn, our keynote speaker this year is Gianna Jessen. And she is an abortion survivor. So there's a number of women out there that speak. She is probably one of the original ones. But they survived abortions. And so their very existence is testimony to the humanity of the unborn child.
Right.
But she's taken it so many steps further. You know, as she says, the abortion that was meant to kill her left her with the gift of cerebral palsy. Wow. And I think from talking, from hearing her talk and kind of knowing her story, she's sincere about that. Wow. That she has used this as an opportunity to show the triumph of the human spirit. And she's gone on to run marathons. She's gone on to sing and have a singing career. She's spoken to parliaments throughout Europe.
Wow.
She's spoken to Congress, and in dramatic fashion. I think
I can't wait.
Yeah.
When is it?
Right. So our dinner's coming up September 28th.
Okay.
It'll be Tuesday, September 28th at the Marriott downtown Indianapolis.
I love that venue. Yeah. You've been there before.
Right. People can register online. They can either go to celebratelifedinner.com or they can go to rtlindy.org and click on the Celebrate Life Dinner thing from our main website, and it'll get you to the registration page for the
And you're still looking for sponsors for this event, for sponsorship, for tables.
You know, it will be a live event. We had to have a virtual event last year,
which actually was very good for a virtual event. I did like it.
Yeah. The virtual event was very successful.
The live is better.
We were very blessed to have a successful virtual event, because I think a lot of organizations had to go that virtual route, and it didn't work out so well.
It's a tough one to pull off well, but yeah, it did work out well. Right. Live event, fantastic.
Live event, and it will be live streamed as well. So we'll have a live streaming option for it.
You'll be there because you're the president.
And of course I'll be there. Yep, I'll be there, and Tim will be there. And,
right, you come meet us.
Right, exactly. We'll be there.
Or avoid us, however you like.
We'll be there in a different form, but you can come meet the cave guys.
Right.
And with that, we need to wrap up the cave for this week. For Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.